Hi. So this summer I had the opportunity to go to China for 5 weeks with Royal Servants. That's my team. There was 31 of us. Before we left, we had training camp. Training camp was a time to get us ready to head to China. It prepared us physically, mentally, spiritually. It got us ready for sharing the gospel, and every day we had an hour for quiet time. We spent in the Bible, reading the word, and just getting ready. When we got to China, we were in smaller cities. We spent our first week in Fuzhou. It's very small for Chinese cities. Most Chinese cities aren't small, but it was smaller. We did a VBS for kids from the age of about 6 to 15. Did crafts, taught them songs, Bible stories, and just lots of games. This is one of the crafts we did with them. It was a puzzle. Most of the kids at this VBS did not speak English, and we did not have translators. So this made it hard to communicate with them and share the gospel with them. But we somehow found ways to do that. This picture here was our last day there, and it was the fun day, I guess you'd say. They made mummies out of each other, and yeah, they enjoyed that a lot. During this VBS, I was in charge of the crafts, and it was a really great opportunity because the kids loved the crafts, and I loved seeing them and how much they had fun with them. But it was also hard because I didn't get to build personal relationships with the kids, or I never really had the chance to personally share my faith with them, which was difficult at times because everybody else was. But it was Tom, our leader. He always encouraged us that we all had different roles in the ministry, and we all had different things we needed to do, and mine was the crafts, I guess. After we were done with our VBS there, we went to an even smaller city, Changzhou. We did a cultural exchange there. It wasn't, it was kind of like a VBS, but it was for high school students. These kids did actually speak English, so that was nice. We exchanged cultures, but at the same time, while we were exchanging our cultures, we were sharing the gospel with them, because we couldn't outright just preach the gospel. We had to do it in a way where it was kind of disguised. So they'd teach us a traditional Chinese song, and then we would teach them a hymn. They would teach us about one of their Chinese festivals, and we would teach them about Christmas or Easter. So it was kind of like a way to share with them without being too obvious. Sometimes the students were interested, and sometimes they weren't. Which was hard at sometimes when they weren't. They would say, "It's what you believe, but it's not what I believe," type thing. And that was discouraging at times. And some of us on our team, we got discouraged over that. But our leaders and our team, when we got discouraged over that, we would remember something we learned at training camp. It's called the definition of successful witnessing. And that is taking the initiative to share Jesus Christ and the power of the Holy Spirit and leaving the results up to God. And as long as we were doing that, we had to leave the rest up to God and just know that he was going to work it all out. That picture is what the Chinese students called Food Day, which is where we got to go out with our students, and they brought us to their homes and made us a bunch of food. This is them learning a Easter skit. That group there is my group of Chinese students, so those were the kids I was with the whole week, talking to them and playing games and doing the cultural camp. After that VBS, or that cultural exchange was over, we had a couple days of prayer ministry. We went out in groups of three or four into the villages, and we prayed and read psalms and sang songs, did prayer walks. We couldn't see the results of this ministry, but it was amazing because we got to praise God where he is not praised and worship God where he is not worshiped, and that was just a great opportunity to be able to do that. This here, this picture, we came across it in one of the villages, was an ancestral worship place. I don't know. We stayed there for about an hour, and we just talked and prayed and sang, and it was really cool to be able to do that. When it was all over, we had like 5 days of debriefing. This prepared us for the transition home. We had lots of studies on choices and fears and courage, and we reflected over the whole summer, just to get us ready to go home, because sometimes you have a cultural shock when you go to a different country, but you also sometimes have a cultural shock coming back after being gone for so long and not being just, it's like an opposite cultural shock. God worked in great ways this summer in the Chinese people's lives, in my life, and lives of others on my team. It was an amazing and memorable summer. Lots of memories were made, and lots of amazing stuff happened. Thank you all for your support and prayers. Couldn't have done it without you guys. And if you would continue to pray for the Chinese students, they have a lot on their shoulders with high school. It's really tough for them, and a lot of them need prayers. Thank you, guys.
Hello, I'm Ethan. There you go. All right, right on. All right, so this summer I had the privilege of serving at the Children's Village, which is an orphanage in Jacmel, Haiti, run by the Hands and Feet Project. All right. The trip was organized by another ministry called Show Hope. Show Hope was founded by Stephen Curtis Chapman for the purpose of raising awareness of the orphan crisis around the world and to promote adoption. To fulfill that mission, they organized trips to orphanages in Haiti and China. All right, this is my team. There was 23 of us. It's a mix of high school and college students from all over the U.S. None of us really knew each other. They're like, some people came in groups of like two or three, but for the most part, no one really knew each other. So it acted as kind of like a barrier. It was kind of a little hard at first. Some of us were shy, and but as time went on, we all were able to like get together and like be good friends. So that made it nice. Towards the end,
the Hands and Feet Project hosts hundreds of short-term missionaries every year at our children's villages on the southern coast of Haiti. We were founded on the Christian principles of caring for the orphaned and abandoned, as well as inviting compassionate individuals to serve beside us. Visitors will reside on campus alongside our American missionaries, our Haitian caregivers and staff, as well as some of God's most precious little ones. Visiting groups are made up of men, women, boys, and girls with all different skill sets. Some groups spend their week building and maintaining the children's villages. Some groups focus on serving and inspiring the amazing kids. And some will serve the Haitian community in which we live. Our mission is to help each of these children reach their God-given potential. Our vision is to encourage and equip you to come and be the hands and feet of Christ, to love the least of these. To learn more, visit our website, www.handsandfeetproject.org.
And just like a drum, I can hear the hearts beating. I know my God won't let them be defeated. Every child has a dream to belong and be loved. Boys become kings, girls will be queens, wrapped in your majesty. When
So as soon as I got off the plane in Haiti, I can immediately tell two things. Haiti was hot, and Haiti was really poor. I was expecting both of these things, but experiencing them in person was really different. The heat never left you, and neither did the poverty. Once we arrived, we had to endure a three-hour drive to the orphanage. We didn't drive in that. We actually drove in a van. But driving to Haiti was an interesting experience, to say the least. If anyone has ever been to Haiti, then you know how terrifying it is. When it comes to rules of the road, there isn't really any. There are only two rules. Get from point A to point B as fast as possible, and don't kill anyone. Our time at the orphanage was good because we had a pretty consistent schedule for the most part. Every morning we woke up, ate breakfast, and had our team meeting and devotion time. After that, we would go and do different construction projects. The main project was building an aquaponics farm, which when completed, would allow the orphanage to raise their own fresh fish and vegetables. Our job was to pour a cement roof, which we did one bucket at a time, up a ladder, which at first, this was a great team building activity. It was difficult at first, but as time went on, we were able to work together a lot more. It was also fun to work alongside with the Haitians there because they're all singing and dancing the whole time and having so much fun, which made it exciting. After we were done working, we ate lunch, regrouped, and went back to work some more until supper. After supper, we would play with the kids. At first, the kids were fairly shy. We would pretend that they didn't understand us. And after a while, we caught on that they were just ignoring us. But as time went on, they warmed up, and they couldn't stay away from us. They also love piggyback rides a lot, like to the point where every time you see them, they'll just jump on your back, and they would be doing all the time, and it seemed like by the end of the day, your shoulders would be like sore, and you couldn't like really move them anymore. But this is one of the kids. He put on my backpack and shirt, and he was on my back for about like 30 minutes, which was really fun, but... also while we were in Haiti, language was a barrier there. It was kind of like hard at first because like you go there and you go in the kitchen and say how to cook, and you'd be like, hola. And you're like, wait, it's not the right language. And they just like look at you and kind of like laugh at you and be like, oh, shoot. And also, the house moms, those are the people who took care of the kids. Like while we're playing with the kids, it would kind of all be like, stay on their porch, like doing their own thing, and they're just like be pointing at us and laughing at us, and you're like, you're not sure what to do, so you kind of like smile and wave. They start laughing even more, and you're just like, what am I doing, Ron? Playing with them was a great time, but the orphanage didn't want us to get too emotionally attached with the kids. At first, we're kind of like confused why this was, but they explained that most of the children could not be adopted, and so it was important that they would bond closely with their Haitian caregivers. They found that bonding with the short mission teams sometimes interfered with that relationship. So while in Haiti, I learned two important lessons. First, I learned how to work as part of a team a lot better, to work more joyfully under stressful conditions. The heat and the primitive construction methods were a little challenging, but the Haitians showed us how to handle this with joy. I also learned how important it is to trust and rely on God. For example, I had to rely on him for strength when I was worn out and didn't want to get out of bed. I also had to trust that he would use me as a tool for him, even when serving the children, many of whom could not speak English. So thank you for listening. I'll be available to answer any questions following the service. I also have some pamphlets on my table that tells you more about Show Hope and Hands and Feet Project. So thank you.
All right. Hi, I'm Monica. I am currently in my final year of the dental hygiene program in WASA. How do you get this to work? You just click it? Oh, okay.
The side?
Oh.
That's the training. Just pull that down, toggle that down. Okay, sorry.
As you can see there. This summer, I was able to use some of that training on a medical mission trip to the Dominican Republic with Global Health Outreach, which is a ministry of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Similar to the Bahamas, the Dominican is often thought of as a nice vacation spot with beautiful beaches. But as the Seelys and Aaron can attest, most of the people in these countries live in poverty and without access to health care. So our team was made up of about 50 members from the U.S. and countless individuals from the local church that we partnered with. Most people on the team from the U.S. have something to do with the medical field. We had family doctors, pediatricians, internists, nurse practitioners, nurses, pharmacists, physical therapists, dentists, as well as pre-med students, pre-dental, pre-physical therapy, pre-PA, including some high school students who were still deciding on whether they wanted to go into the medical field, and even some non-medical people who served as the logistics crew. In the top right photo, you can see the whole dental team. So the whole clinic was set up in a school, and when we arrived in the morning, there was often already a line of people waiting to be seen. And on the dental floor, we had about 2 to 3 Dominican dentists working in one room, and in the other room was me and the 3 American dentists. Also with us were 2 pre-dental students and 4 high school seniors from the local church who served as our translators. In the top right is my translator, Laura. And the church that we partnered with is really training their young people to lead. Almost all of the translators for the entire team were in high school, either juniors or seniors. And without any supervision, they kept things moving, bringing in patients, deciding which patients need to be seen by which dentist, translating medical terminology that most Americans don't even understand, and praying with each patient before they left. As I said, my translator is Laura, and she was really similar to me, although she wants nothing to do with dentistry or blood. And when you have dentists pulling a lot of teeth, there's usually a bit of blood. But despite her not liking blood, she was a trooper and didn't flinch and kept working hard. I loved hearing her pray in Spanish. It was beautiful to listen to. And she was even able to teach me some blessings in Spanish. Going into this trip, I was really nervous about not being skilled enough. In school, I had only ever seen 8 patients total, ever. So I was nervous. And Sunday night, before we started seeing patients, I think the lead dentist kind of figured that out, probably because I wouldn't stop asking questions. But he reassured me and recognized that, no, I wouldn't be able to do everything that these people needed. Not even the dentist could do everything they needed. What they really needed was Jesus. And by offering free dental care, the local church was able to interact with these people, share the gospel with them, pray with them, and counsel them. And that helped a little bit, because come Monday morning, I was still shaking. Throughout the week, everyone was able to go out into the village and visit people who were physically unable to get to the clinic. The local church identified these people ahead of time, so we were able to bring wheelchairs and walkers with us. While the doctors were inside visiting people and evaluating them, a couple of us were able to apply fluoride to any of the kids outside to help prevent cavities. This was new to me, but cavities are actually extremely prevalent because buying a bottle of Coke is often cheaper than getting clean water. So, if the older kids refused fluoride, usually the younger kids followed suit, so we ended up just playing with them. The little girl in the bottom left there, she was just fascinated with the plastic helicopters we brought. So, all right, by day 3, I was finally getting to know everyone better and getting more comfortable with what I was doing in clinic and seeing patients. The bottom right is what you get when you put 50 people in a 30-person bus. So thankfully, it was air-conditioned. Although it was almost always busy in dental, Thursday I was done seeing everyone who wanted a cleaning before the dentists were done, so I was able to spend some time in the courtyard with a few kids. I could talk to them in very, very broken Spanish, to which they laughed at a lot. And I got to know this little guy a little bit, and he wanted to take a selfie and even edit it himself. So, and there's another picture with him. So a little story here. 90% of the people I saw were more difficult cases than I'd ever seen before. So it was very challenging, but our last day of clinic took the prize. I did a quick assessment as usual on this particular person, and I knew right away that it was going to be really hard. I didn't even know where to start or what to do, so I got some advice from one of the dentists who always went above and beyond to help me and make sure I was doing what I needed to. So I decided what procedure I was going to do and knew I was going to need an assistant, but there was only enough assistants for each of the dentists. So I only got one if some unsuspecting person walked through the door and asked if anyone needed help. So I trained them real quick and coached them through as we went along. Some picked it up quicker than others, and it was always a relief when someone who had already been trained walked in. And not every assistant is the same, either good ones and not so good ones. The good ones know what you need them to do and do it before you even know what you need them to do. And that was so helpful today. My best assistant walked in right at that moment, and we got to work in no time. Normally, I would have never done this procedure without numbing the patient because it is uncomfortable and it can be painful. But we had to save all the anesthetics for extractions and restorations. So we had to work fast and as efficiently as we could. It was by far the most difficult case I'd seen, but it did end up going slowly because I had a good assistant and I learned a good lesson from it. Because my best assistants were watching my move and following my lead, we were able to get things done quickly and effectively. A bad assistant either doesn't pay attention to what the leader is doing and sits around, or they just do what they think is best. Both of these can cause a procedure to go wrong or just be ineffective or inefficient. As a follower of Jesus, I need to be a good assistant. If I'm not in step with the Spirit, I won't know where he's leading, or I may simply go in the direction I think is best. As a good follower, I need to be watching where he goes and follow his lead. I learned many more lessons on this trip, and just because I'm back doesn't mean I've stopped learning. For example, that story, I didn't even learn that until I was preparing for this update. So, if you're in the medical field or interested in any medical profession, this trip is really great to use that training or to see how that training can be used in a mission setting. So, thank you.
Hi, everybody. Let's see. So, I'm Bethany. Some of you guys know me. But on the past 6 months, I was in Colorado, as some of you know, and I was teaching at a school. So, this is, it was at the school that I went to before. So, I went to a Bible school for a year, and then they have a little school. It's called Ellerslie Prep Academy, and it's basically for staff and church families, just coming alongside them and supporting them as a ministry. But here's a picture of my class. But Ellerslie as a ministry, the purpose of Ellerslie is to be discipled and assured of your position in Christ and knowing the truth for yourself. And they pour into students from all over the world, have different semesters and stuff. You can look up more about it online, but then taking all that, what you've learned, and pouring it out to the people around you and learning to be the hands and feet of Christ. But the vision of Ellerslie Prep Academy is kind of a homeschool type of a model. So I was a tutor for kindergarten through third grade, and coming alongside all these people that are serving in full-time ministry right now. It's a really good mix of teaching academics and discipleship in like every aspect that you can, taking opportunities and learning to pour into these little kids. But the goal is winning their hearts for Christ and working with the parents in that goal, like pushing them to Jesus and knowing that. But so don't let their cute little faces deceive you, because sometimes it was more like this. But yeah, so as a teacher, I felt like I started to understand 3 John 1:4, where it says, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in truth." Because when you start working in ministry and pouring into little kids, you realize that there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. There's a lot more spiritually. Like, you want them to know Jesus. If that's your goal, then it's like it's consuming. It takes up your whole heart, and you just want them to know the truth. And so when you see them starting to walk in that, it is a great joy. Like, there were many days we had struggles, there were many days you had temper tantrums, but you had to learn how to point them to Christ. Say, so is this honoring Jesus right now? How can we change this? How do you want to know Jesus more? How can we push you to know Jesus? And so I felt like I got to understand that joy a little bit more of when you see the kids learning to walk in that truth. When they have a bad day, you talk to their parents and they would go home, take care of it again, and then come back and be like really apologetic, really wanting to live this life that is for Christ. And I was so blessed by that. So the discipleship process was definitely a challenge to me, because little kids definitely can sense if you're being real or not. And so It was learning to live. I felt like I had to learn all over again what it means to live for Christ, and then showing that in my actions, because they were watching everything you were doing and copycatting, as you can see. But I also learned that the battle for children's hearts is very real. It's a very, very clear tactic of the enemy for especially little children. I worked with little children. There's also older kids, so 4th through 12th grade. I wasn't working with them, but we all as teachers realize there's a much bigger battle for these kids' hearts and their lives to serve Jesus. And I learned that you need to be in prayer. These kids need to be covered in prayer. Like, that's the only thing that is going to change their life. It's not going to be you living a good life in front of them, even though that's helpful. It's more of coming to God in humility and saying, God, I can't. We need you to come in and live in these kids' lives. And that's how you win the battle. I felt like the other girl that's there with me, her name is Therese. She was one of my roommates when I was in school, and we got to work together as teachers. And both of us learned that unity together, working in ministry, praying, like trying to pray each morning before the kids would come into the rooms and just ask God to bless that day and ask God to come and speak to these children, whether it be through teaching them math or reading or writing or through discipleship times with the different teachers that would come in and teach them more about Jesus. But it was a real gift for me to invest in these kids and see God work in their hearts. They really got a big piece of my heart. I was back in Colorado this past week and got to see a bunch of them, which was the greatest thing I have experienced in a long time. But I was thinking, in regards to children and working with children, a couple of weeks ago, I was reading Luke 9, and this really stuck out to me. There's a part where it says, you know, the disciples started arguing about who is the greatest, who is, like, being so full of themselves, and but Jesus, knowing the reasoning of their hearts, took a child and put him by his side and said, whoever receives this child in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives him who sent me. For he who is least among you all is the one who is great. And I feel like, what a rebuke to me, because it's so easy for me to get caught up in my own life and how I'm an adult and I have to figure out what I'm going to do and I have to do this and that. But the Lord asks us to receive the children in our midst and to look out for them, because that's Jesus. We're receiving Jesus when we're speaking to the children in our lives and loving them and pushing them to Christ, because that's what God did. That's what he wants us to do. So it was really neat to learn to receive Christ through each of these little kids. A lot of them are adopted, I guess you can kind of tell. And it's just neat to see how the families poured into each of these kids. And I felt like I got discipled just watching that and working with them and seeing the redemption story in most of their lives, as a lot of them are adopted, and how Christ works to adopt us. He has redeemed us each individually. And I only got to play a small part in their lives, but it was such a blessing to be able to learn to love them and cherish them and point them to Jesus. But yeah, so anyway, I have seen that in all of you, and I appreciate how you as a church have poured into the kids around us, whether it be through VBS or Sunday school. And it was such a blessing for me to think about that and be like, wow, you know, without the church pointing me to show me this, I wouldn't be walking in this myself. So thank you for your love and prayers. Appreciate you all.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chloe. First of all, why I wanted to go to this trip was especially with the Global Fingerprint, because I sponsor like two kids before I went to Africa. I actually just sponsored a little girl from Haiti and stuff. My heart, I guess God has given me the heart to be able to just love kids and stuff, especially kids who are like suffering, because I can relate to that, because I was in Haiti and stuff, just like didn't know when my next meal was coming from and stuff, just like not really clean water and stuff. So it's a God gift that he has given me and stuff. So it's just been amazing to see that, what he's been pouring in my heart for those kids and stuff. So, so we got to work down in Africa, Gemena area, for 3 weeks. And just to be able to work with the orphans down there, and they're like true orphans, like either one of them have a mom and not the dad, the dad or the mom, or not the mom, and also by AIDS and stuff, the parents get AIDS and they're just all living on their own and stuff. So I got to be down there and just like have a bunch of kids with me, and I had to ask them questions like, are you a believer? Do you go to school? And like, do you have shoes and stuff? Just like the basic sample questions for kids to be able to understand and stuff. So, and a lot of them were like living with like grandparents, like either she's like 80 years old and probably gonna die soon and stuff. So it's just been amazing to be able to go down there and stuff. And we were staying, it's the Ilikia means like hope and stuff, and to be able to just see what God is doing down there and just like be able to just for me to be able to just open my heart for God to be able to do his will into my heart and stuff. So, and that's like where we were leaving, like for like the 3 weeks in Gemena and stuff now. And then like the two girls were like one of our translator kids and stuff, so I got to hang out with them for a little bit. And also that house down there was a 3 weeks house, just like getting to be able to like meditate on God. And like Kellen and Shiloh, we got pretty close in that trip because it's like when one of us down, everybody else just talk, okay, Chloe, this is what God brought you here on this trip for a reason and stuff. You just need to be able to trust him more and stuff. So so that's like the Global Fingerprint kid sponsorship and stuff. Those are the kids that I took pictures of to be able to put in the information of the computer so that their sponsors can see that they're actually healthy, growing, and learning something into school and stuff. So and then like for, this is Kinshasa. We, after 3 weeks in Gemena, with God's will, he brought us to Kinshasa, and we did a VBS, and it was kind of difficult, especially with the language and stuff. We didn't know the language. We like, there was translators, but we got there in the morning to try to explain to them what we were going to do. And when it came to the games, they had no idea. They just told us to go and just do it. We're like, we explained it to you and stuff. But for me, I had like 25 kids. It's like 2 to 5 year olds. Like, yeah, just by myself. Sometimes the translators would just leave and I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do? I don't know the language and stuff. So either they were running around, beating on each other, and I'm holding, trying to grab them, bring them back to sit down, and it's like, it was a disaster, so I just decided to run with them and just play with them and stuff. So it was hard, but you could see they were learning, like, they were teaching them Bible verses, and so that really touched me. It's like, they're, like, so young, they can't sit still, but when it came to, like, Bible verses, they knew exactly. They quoted the Bible verses like right away and stuff, even though I was watching them. They're like hitting each other, pulling each other's hair and stuff, and they just got the Bible verses. It was just amazing to see they were actually paying attention, even though you could tell they weren't paying attention. So, I mean, for me, my whole life, it's because God has brought me here for a reason, from Haiti to here, for him to be able to give me a job, to be able to be healthy, and to be able to go and make a difference. I guess I don't have to go overseas to be able to make a difference, but I know that I've made differences in people's life here, especially at my job, to be able to just, like, a simple conversation leads to, like, 45 minutes of sharing what God has done in my life and my belief and stuff. So I guess I'm not just going on a trip just to go be able to go overseas and share the gospel, because I am actually sharing the gospel right here. But my heart is just in Haiti. It's where I was from, and I can relate to the people and stuff. It's just that an opportunity for me. And for me, my whole life, I've been telling God, I do not care if I'm married. I want to be able to go and serve people. Just being single, also being happy, because God is in the center of everything, leading me to it and stuff. So it's been my dream to just be able to go and share the gospel. And I guess for me, because I've never been to college, just like, I don't know what to offer the people, but I know that I know the Bible, I know Jesus, and that's something you can offer the people and the kids and stuff. So it's just amazing and stuff. So like a 5-day trip, we had to go to different villages, I would say, and just like people would like welcoming us, singing and stuff. It was kind of awkward for me because it's like they're welcoming you like you are practically a god. And I was like, that's not what I came on this trip. We are humans. God died for us. It's not like I want to be welcomed in a way like that. They had like palm leaves and stuff. And I was like, okay. But it was their gratitude to show that you guys left your country to be able to come and try to help us for the children to be able to get sponsored, to be able to go to school, like, till 12th grade, and to just be able to have an education and stuff. So it was really amazing, even though we were practically almost died on our truck broke over, like, two times. It's like one time it almost, like, flipped over, and I was so mad and stuff. I would just, like, got up the truck, all of us, and walked for 7 miles. And it took, like, 2 hours before that truck got unstuck. But it was, I guess God was just teaching me to be like flexible, to depend on Him no matter what happens and stuff. So, and that little girl also, she wasn't an orphan. Her name is Sarah, and she just like touched me and stuff to be able to see like Christ in her, for me to be able to like, even though I can't like communicate with her, just holding her and smiling and just like laughing, because like this quote, like everybody smile in the same language, even though you don't know the language, they can understand what you're saying, just like loving on them and stuff. So I guess if it's God will, I hope to go back someday, but just to be able to see what God's doing in my life and to be able to open up and say, God, wherever you want me, I am willing to say yes and just go, because you've called people to stay or to go, and I believe that He's calling me to be able to go and just like share the gospel. Even though I do not have a college degree, it doesn't have to be a college degree. You can just serve anywhere and stuff. So Africa was just amazing. It was just kind of like, I'm still trying to figure out, oh my goodness, I've been to Africa. It's like looking at the map, like you're in school, it's like, oh my goodness, Africa. I wish I could go there. And then you go there, it's like, oh, I'm in Africa. And then you come back home, you're like, oh yes, I went to Africa, I can be able to say that and stuff. So it's just been an amazing, I had like a lot of struggle, just like things happening down there and stuff. And it was just amazing how Kellen and Shiloh were just there for me. It's like, Chloe, this happened to you because God knew that you were strong enough to handle it and you'll be able to speak up to try to figure out this thing out and stuff. So this trip was just like, especially this trip to Africa, finally realized that what God has in mind for me, and that I don't need to be like, keep saying, God, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? That He already answered, gave me the answer and stuff. I just need to take the next step and to be able to follow and stuff. So I want to just thank all of you guys for sponsoring me to be able to make this trip, especially my parents who had my back every single time. Every time, like when I told them I needed something, they are there, or that God is leading me to something. She never say no. She's like, just continue to pray. I know God is leading you, and I'm 100% behind you. And that's really cool that you have a Christian family to be able to say that, and just 100% behind you to be able to lead you in the right direction. So thank you, guys. I'm going to miss Africa. It's been a great trip, but I know that God has a purpose and that He's not going to let me down, that this trip was the reason for me to be able to make another trip. So thank you.
So I'm Kellen, and me and Chloe went on the same trip. So we were in the Democratic Republic of the Congo for 7 weeks. So real quick, in Congo, we had like a little running joke. In Lingala, which is like the native language in Congo, or in the particular area we were in, the word for chicken is so-so. We had a lot of chicken there, some of which didn't agree with our stomachs. And when I got back to the States, people would ask me, how was the food in Congo? And I would say, so-so. Okay. So why Congo? Before I get into the details of the trip, let's review what happened to go on this trip. Africa has been a lifelong dream for me. I've been wanting to go on a longer mission trip for a while now to experience real day-to-day missionary life, the highs and lows of being on a team, getting to know another culture, and learning to depend on God in the midst of hardship. I heard about Check 7 through my dad, and I learned more about it from Chloe's trip to Thailand a couple years ago. And then after praying about it, I ultimately chose Congo because it offered an opportunity for me to use my passions and missions and also to work with Global Fingerprints, with whom I sponsor a little girl. Okay. So what is Check 7? Just read this. Check 7 is, this is just from their website, it's on a mission and in community. It's hard to find programs that train and equip you for both. Reach Global 7-week trips for college-age young adults will bring you to some of the world's most remarkable locations, forging lifelong friendships with your teammates, all while you can learn how to effectively engage in God's mission alongside Reach Global's local practitioners. So Check 7 helps train you to be comfortable traveling to a foreign country for missions on their own at some point, so it helps to empower them. It trains leaders, and it also encourages working alongside existing local ministries so that we don't leave the impression that foreigners are coming to fix everything with outside funds. But we are there to learn from them and help local ministries by encouraging discipleship and meeting other needs. Okay, a little bit about our adventures here. So as Chloe said, half of our trip was in Gemena. And Gemena is like, she showed some pictures, but picture like Lion King, so it's like red dirt and those like African trees that you always think of and jungles, so that was really cool. And then half of it was in Kinshasa, which is a large city. In both places, we dove right into the culture. We dressed like them. We got Congolese clothes. We let them cornrow our hair, which if you never got cornrows, it's really painful. And if you get an itch, it's not good. And we traveled like them. We ate their food. And in one of those pictures, we had fried caterpillars one day. Chloe thought it tasted like chicken, but, you know. And then we also lived alongside them. They may have laughed at our efforts sometimes, but I know that they appreciated the effort we made. Sometimes we sacrificed a lot of comfort, but it gave us a chance to rely on each other and on God. When we were in Gemena, we took a 5-day trip, traveling to 4 different villages, so right from village to village, staying the night there, to visit different sponsored children. So one day, we're driving in our rickety truck. It's the top left picture, and then the other picture where they're, like, pushing the truck in the stormy skies there. So we're traveling in our truck in the mud, and these roads are really bad. Even the Congolese people say that the roads are bad, and they have giant potholes, and it's insane. You always feel like you're going to tip over. So we're in the back of this truck standing up, and we're, like, hanging tight to these bars because the dirt roads are really bad. And this trip happened to be 350 kilometers. This is on our way home. It's about 250 miles. Took all day. About halfway through, we came to like a super muddy spot. And in order to get through, the truck driver just decided to like speed through it and get all the way through. And bad idea, the truck pretty much tipped over. It was really close. So we had a little scare there. And so like Chloe was saying, we had to walk about 7 miles until they could get the truck out and catch up to us. So that was a good experience where we learned to be flexible and just take on the adventure. All right. So Gemena, this is the first place we were in. Our job in Gemena was to travel to different villages. We'd interview the sponsored children, with a translator, take their picture, and then have them write a letter to their sponsor. Sometimes we'd share the gospel or a testimony with them, and always we could pray with them and play with them afterwards. On another day, we would go to the office to update the Global Fingerprints website. So, let's see, bottom right picture is our little office. We had limited Wi-Fi, so it took a while to do all the work that we had, but that was okay. Bottom left picture is just taking pictures and hanging out with the kids, and they loved camera action. It was really fun for them. So Global Fingerprints, all sponsored orphans have lost either one or both of their parents. They are still under the care of a guardian, but Global Fingerprints provides education, Bible teaching, and helps with medical and nutritional care. When we would visit these villages, we'd see so many children wandering around in rags and with swollen stomachs because of malnutrition. There are some wells in the larger villages, but in the more remote ones, the only water source is a dirty river that people also wash in. Global Fingerprints gives hope to these children. On my days at the office, I was able to read a few letters from the sponsored children. They were always so grateful to their sponsors, and many times when I was interviewing the children, they would ask to pray for their sponsors, and that really touched me. Quick little story, the girl in the top left picture. This is an example of a girl that did not have a sponsor at the time, and I actually interviewed her, so that's why I have a picture of her, thinking that she was a part of the program, and then later on I found out that she wasn't yet sponsored. She has epilepsy, and then because of it, one day she fell into the fire and got badly burned. So Rachel, the missionary with us, asked me to write a story about her so she could get a sponsor more quickly. And I think we're pretty close to getting a sponsor for her, so that was one of the highlights of my trip. Okay, so Kinshasa. Gemina was an adventure, and Kinshasa was also an adventure in a different way. This was a big city, so it was pretty crowded there. And immediately we moved there, life became more crowded. We went from a quiet little house of three to a full house of six girls. There we learned the importance of relationships. We discovered each other's personalities and how they fit together and didn't. We had the introverts and the extroverts, a business major and a nurse, the ones who made the jokes and the ones who were the target of the jokes. It was great to discover how to work on a team of completely different people. We did a VBS there that Chloe talked about, so we had the opportunity to join that for a week. It was easily the busiest week of our time in Congo. VBS in Congo was like VBS in America, but on steroids and without all the resources. What that means is like we didn't always have a printer, we didn't have a lot of supplies you normally think of, and the kids there are crazy. You have to like keep an eye on them all the time. Any games that you do are like upped a level because the kids just go crazy. We played Duck Duck Goose, and it was like playing Duck Duck Goose all over again. It was really fun. So let's see here. Each night, we would spend hours finishing up planning the craft and activity for the next day. A few times, we didn't have access to a printer, so we created and traced all 120 of our crafts and coloring pages. That was good team bonding time. The next morning, we would get up early to go to VBS. We were each assigned to a class with a Congolese teacher. I had the six-year-olds, so these were a lot of fun. I learned a lot from the teachers and how to engage the kids in the lesson. Communicating was a huge struggle since we didn't know the language. But there were moments when I was able to explain an activity to the kids or do a review game, and they got it. The best part was seeing how the kids warmed up to us. On the first day, the kids in my class didn't want to sit too close to me. They were a little nervous. But on about day three, they're pretty much tackling me during one of the games, so it was really fun. VBS is probably one of the most challenging but rewarding parts of our trip. And the tab at the centers, which is the top left picture there, this is one of the main ministries that we worked with, and they're programs for women who come from a rough lifestyle or are struggling to provide for their families. This program teaches women Bible and sewing lessons so they have a way to provide for themselves. The program is thriving because it's biblically based, and it's all about Congolese people helping Congolese people. The church plays a huge role in growth because once funds are in place, one church will start a tap the center and help to keep it going. When we visited the centers, we shared future hopes and dreams with each other, and I was impressed by how many of them wanted to start their own tab at the center one day. It's a thriving ministry, and yet they still don't have enough sewing machines and other supplies for the amount of women they take in. And Mama Claudine, that's the lady in the top right picture, She is the one who started the Tabitha ministry. She's an amazing woman. She first came to Kinshasa hoping to serve in some way. And what she saw was women who were getting pregnant out of wedlock and having abortions or leaving the babies to die. And she began in her neighborhood with a few girls and taught them basic health and Bible. Soon it grew, and the idea for the Tabitha Centers formed. And in the past year, they've grown 40 centers in the city of Kinshasa. Okay, so life lessons, things I learned in this trip. I learned a lot. One of the things I learned was that God created us to be relational beings, and the way that relationships are handled will make or break a ministry. And we learned this from being on a team and from relating to the people there. And we were encouraged by a leader of a Tabitha ministry at the end of the trip. And she said that once you become like our brother or sister, then we will listen to what you have to say. So how important making those relationships with these people are. We also learned that God is good. We saw a lot of poverty there and experienced plenty of difficulty ourselves. But we had to remind each other that God is good no matter what. And God is constant. He is the same God halfway across the world where people worship him differently and in another language. It was weird because we went to the churches there and we didn't understand what was going on, and they worship totally different, so it was kind of hard to get into that, but we still had to remind ourselves that they're still worshiping the same God. Native ministry is important and effective. The Tabitha Centers are a good example of this. It's a thriving ministry started by Congolese people and serving Congolese people. They already understand the language and the culture and the people far more than we ever could. And this ministry has the potential not only for growing, but also multiplying. And they're empowering women by their own and for their own. Flexibility is best. This lesson was reinforced a lot throughout the trip. Plans are always changing. God is the best at changing my plans, I know. The best we can do is to follow his lead and trust in his plan. In Congo, we have a little thing called Congolese time. So they would tell you to be somewhere at 7, and then they would come to pick you up at 9 or 10. So you learn to be really flexible and patient there. And then daily intake of truth is necessary to distinguish the devil's lies each day. When you're away from family, church, and Wi-Fi for as long as we were, you quickly learned how important daily time with God is to carry you through the day and help you process when the day is over. And then ministry is not about what we have to offer. The purpose is to bring glory to God. This is a hard lesson I had to learn. I spent too much time focusing on trying to fit my gifts into the ministry we were doing there. But in a different culture, many times I didn't quite fit in. So it took me a while to realize that I wasn't necessarily there just to share my gifts, but to serve the people in the ministry there wherever they needed me and to give the glory to God as I stepped out of my comfort zone and worked in areas that I was not gifted in. So real quick, prayer requests. Here's what you can pray for Congo. The Tabitha Centers for leadership, growth, and finances. And their goal is to have 1,000 centers by 2019. So again, they have just 40 now. They're praying about a long-term team to be established in Kinshasa with Reach Global. Elections actually are happening next summer in the DRC and can cause a lot of unrest. So that sometimes that's dangerous for missionaries and stuff there too. Emily, who is our group leader in Kinshasa, is praying about her next step when her two-year team with EFCA is up. For village ministry, that the children be reached with the gospel. So we went to a lot of villages and we were working with Global Fingerprints, and you could tell how remote they were, and some people had probably never heard the gospel. So just pray for that. Global Fingerprints, pray for the staff relationships and their families to stay strong. And then pray that God would call more families and individuals to sponsor these children. And maybe consider praying about this yourself. It's a pretty cool thing. Okay, real quick, future plans, how this affected me. After debriefing and stuff, I came home excited just to serve God here and where I am now and whatever it is that I can. Continue to invest in my sponsored girl. So she's with Global Fingerprints and just being, I didn't get to see her because she lived too far away, but she was actually in the Congo. And so just to continue to invest in her and write letters to her, and I know that means a lot to them. Continue with my college plans, associates in occupational therapy, and hopefully in bachelor's in communications and journalism with the hope of using them in missions. That's still a goal there. And then after school, they encourage us at debriefing, even if like long-term missions isn't in your plan or what God has for you, just serving 1 to 2 years in ministry at this age is a good opportunity, so I'm praying about that. Okay. Whoops, really quick. Okay, I'll go back. So this is a quick video of VBS, and we taught the kids a song in English, so we taught them "My God Is So Big," and that was really cool to see them sing that and get it down so well, and they have a lot of fun with it, and it was just a big theme of this trip, so I'll show you that.
My God is so big, so strong, is so mighty, then nothing, my God, and that's you, for you. My God is so big, so strong.
So that was really fun. That was a highlight of our trip. So I just want to thank you all for really supporting me and coming behind me, and whether it was funds or prayers, and I think we all felt your prayers there while we were on this trip. And I just want to mention really quick, downstairs I'll have a table of a couple of things from Africa, and also I do have some sponsor cards available, so if you want to talk to me about child sponsorship with Global Fingerprints, you can sponsor a child today or another time, but feel free to ask me more about that. So thank you.
Okay, so I know we're running a little bit late today, so thank you guys for bearing with us and hearing our stories, and hopefully you guys have been encouraged by these. Football's not on, so that's good, so we can go a little late. Hopefully you guys don't get too upset. We've got a couple more weeks. So for those of you who don't know, I'm entering my third year at UW La Crosse, majoring in athletic training and pre-physical therapy. So the easiest way to describe what an athletic trainer does, for those of you who don't know, is if you're watching a football game or sporting event, someone goes down the field, ATs are the people who run out there and save their life. No, but we're the ones out who run out there and like evaluate the injury. They'll rehab them, get them back. Kind of like a physical therapist for sports is an easy way to understand it, I think. So this summer, I had the chance to intern with Athletes in Action. So quick show of hands, how many of you guys are familiar with Athletes in Action or have heard of it before? A couple of you? Okay. So even up until the day I left, I still wasn't 100% sure like what they did, or yeah, I knew a little bit what they did, but I didn't know totally all that they were busy with. So on the screen, that's their logo and their motto, I guess, or their mission statement. It's striving to see Christ followers in every team, every sport, every nation by using the platform of sport so that everyone knows someone who truly follows Jesus. So I had previously thought that they were just involved in campus ministry, and that's a big part of what they do. So they have staff on, I think it's over 200 campuses in the United States. It's like about ministering specifically to the athletes. Their thinking is that athletes are people who are influencers. I mean, if, I know I do, and especially as a young kid, really looking up to you know, professional athletes, college athletes. So their goal is to influence the influencers for Christ. They feel they can reach a lot of people that way. So that's a big part of what they do. They also send teams overseas. See if I can get this. So this is a team that just got back from Colombia, a basketball team. So they'll assemble Division I, Division II college athletes from all over the United States, and then they'll send them over to foreign countries. I know this one was Colombia, but they recently sent, I think, a volleyball team to China. And if you guys know anything about China, you can't get in there with the message of Christ very easily. But if you're bringing a sports team, they like line everything up for you, so they'll give you a place to stay. They'll tell you who you're going to play and when. And the ministry that goes on is after they play the teams, I think they usually win, but after they play the teams, they'll then share the gospel with them. So we'll sit them down, someone will share their testimony, and then someone will tell them about the good news of Jesus Christ. And they're usually very receptive to that because they have a lot of respect for American athletes. So like, I think sports is a powerful way to get into countries like China where you normally couldn't get into just as a missionary or something like that. So I was on this thing this summer called X Project as an athletic training intern. So that's a small picture. But that's the team we had. So there was interns from all over the United States. Some of them were Division I athletes. Others had never touched football or basketball or anything like that in their life, and they weren't into sports at all. But they saw the value of the ministry and what could be done with it. So, like, I was an athletic training intern. There were others who were with media, planning camps and special events, things like that. Along the way, we also got we heard like weekly messages. We had weekly Bible studies, weekly discipleship. So we were really being poured into ourselves, which is awesome. At the same time, we were able to serve others. So one of the main things that the athletic trainers did, that was the five of us. It was five students and one, so there's six that I can't count. I was homeschooled. So there's six people there, five students, one certified. So our main role in the summer, we had two main roles, was to work with the Xenia Scouts. So these guys are a summer league baseball team. It's Division I, Division II athletes that come to Xenia, Ohio. I forgot to mention, that's where I was, Xenia, Ohio. It's like a suburb of Dayton, so in southern Ohio, little town, like 25,000 maybe. That's where the world headquarters is of this ministry. They have a huge sports complex there, baseball fields, soccer fields, football fields. It's pretty quality and nice. There's an all-turf baseball field. But these guys are all believers from various colleges, and they come from this summer league team. They play other teams in the Great Lakes League, and it's similar to what we do overseas, but these guys do it in the States. So, like, they'll play a team, and they play them a bunch of times throughout the summer. I think they play, like, 60 games in, like, 65 days or some crazy thing. But so the last time they play a team, they'll also sit them down, share their testimony with them. Someone will share the gospel. Again, they get really good response from that. So our role was to be the medical staff for these guys, so take care of them throughout the summer, so that they could perform their best and then do ministry after the game. So that was really cool to see these guys. They all love the Lord. And coming from a secular university, I don't see that a lot with the athletes I work with. So it was just really refreshing and really encouraging to me. And I hope that, I think they said this to us, that we really encouraged them as well. So that was a really cool part of the summer. Another thing that we did was we worked various camps that came through. So they have this nice sports complex. So that every week they have a new camp come in. One was a Tony Dungy camp. So those of you who don't know, legendary coach for the Indianapolis Colts, strong believer. So he came, and we had about 1,400 high school football players come, and they had a football camp. So they got to hear the gospel from Tony Dungy, and that's who drew them in was, you know, this guy's here. They want to hear from him. So these kids who, you know, inner cities may not have heard the gospel before got to come and hear it from Tony Dungy, participate in a football camp. So again, we just got to be in the medical staff for that and come alongside them and help them with that ministry. This picture is from another camp that we did called Ultimate Training Camp. So it was that this one was an inner city one. So inner city kids from like Dayton, Detroit, Louisville is how you say it apparently, all came to this camp, and it was a sports camp. So like they were like, I mean, there's coaches from different Division I colleges, Michigan State, the Giants player was there, one of their cornerbacks, to help coach this thing. And so these kids, what draws the kids. They have these really good coaches. They're going to get better at the sport, and that's what they do. But they also get the gospel shared with them, and they also learn how they can incorporate Christ into their sport, how they can, as Colossians 3:23 says, do everything for the glory of God, and that includes your sport. Probably the highlight of the summer for me was at the end of this camp, they do this thing called the special. So the special stands for, let's see if I can get it right, spiritual principles plus exhaustion equals confidence in the Almighty Lord or something like that. So it's a 20-hour sports marathon. Goes from like 3 p.m. one day to like noon the next day with like 4 hours of sleep in there. And they're just going from one thing to another. It's volleyball, it's tug-of-war, it's crab soccer, ultimate frisbee, CrossFit challenge, everything you can imagine. It sounds insane, but the goal of it, or the thinking behind it, is to is to kind of simulate what Jesus went through at the cross, where he was tortured, he was crucified, just so these kids can maybe just get a glimpse of what he suffered for them. And then at the end, they have this thing called Golgotha. So they go, there's a local park, it's like a half-mile hill. They have to carry a 2x4. It's kind of a marathon, but it's supposed to be like a contemplative time for them. Carry a 2x4 down the hill, but then back up on their shoulders, like Jesus carried the cross. It's just really powerful to see how God worked in those kids that week, and especially that last event is really cool. For us as ATs, this was incredibly stressful, especially this first one. For whatever reason, they scheduled it when the staff at Athletes in Action was gone. So it was five students, one certified, 150 kids. Most of them, they don't know their bodies, they're young, haven't been trained in how to stay hydrated, so we're doing our best, but we sent multiple kids to the hospital, many went down with cramps, so we were just working. I mean, we got like no sleep, so working for 20 hours, it was insane, but it was just cool to see when someone did go down, how the whole camp would just come around them and pray for them, and really be united in Christ through that. A lesson I learned from this is probably one of the themes of the summer for me was, I think if God wants you to do something, you feel he's calling you to do something, he'll give you the strength to do that. And for me, it was especially little things, like not like, oh, God's calling me to China, he'll give me the strength to do that, which is true. But it was really emphasized like little things, like, you know, you feel the Spirit nudging you to go, you know, talk to someone about the Lord or ask them how they're doing or encourage them. And that may be scary to me and maybe some of you guys too. But if he wants you to do that, he will work through you and it won't be on your own strength, but it'll be through his. And we saw that here, you know, staying up for 20 hours, working with these kids. We were incredibly exhausted mentally, physically, but we knew this is what God wanted us to do. And he really gave us the strength to do that. So that was a highlight for me. I'm almost done. That is the headquarters we were at. So along with all the ministry that we got to do and being part of the medical staff for these camps and for the baseball team, just great relationships with the rest of X Project. These people are going to be some of my lifelong friends. I still keep in contact with them almost daily, about a month later now. And we got to, it was a great environment to grow in spiritually, a great community. Everyone's just really encouraging. We did outreaches. We were at a gay pride event in Columbus doing an outreach there. We did street witnessing. Like I said, we got poured into by the staff there. And we also were able to take that and then give it to others in the way we served. In the future with Athletes in Action, some of the team felt they were called to become full-time staff. I personally didn't feel that, but what I would like to do is stay involved, is go on some tours with them. So like I mentioned, they send teams to China, they send teams to Colombia. So in a couple years, once I'm certified, I'm hoping I can still stay involved by being the athletic trainer for those tours to keep those guys healthy so they can keep on doing the ministry. So thanks for listening to us today. This is the last one. We're just going to close with a final song, but I hope you guys have been encouraged a little bit. And we just appreciate your patience because I know we're going a little bit long. So thank you.